Hi, I'm Lashana Lynch, and you are listening to the Post Credit Scene podcast.
I feel like we haven't been in the studios for a while now, innit?
This one?
Just recording. I think the last time that we recorded was Dreaming Whilst Black.
Yeah, when did you guys record the two episodes? Was it like 2 days before that?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's been like 2 weeks then. Yeah. Feels like a while.
Feels like a while still.
Yeah, it's been a while for me, to be fair. Much needed break, but it's kind of cool to be back and just to get to chatting about film and TV. No Biss today, no Jason. Why is Jason not here? Oh well.
He's going why to be with his babes.
I don't really care.
Oh, it don't matter either. Yeah, you lot tried it in the Dreaming Whilst Black episode. Or she tried it. She's a beg, man.
What she tried? She tried
it. Oh, yeah.
She's such a liar. She's like, Manny was like, oh, yeah, I'm glad it's just us two or something. Or she said that. And you were like, no, you're lying.
Yeah, you miscast.
Why is she bare capping for? I don't get it. I watched the episode. Just to say, though, I must say, you lot did a really, really good job with the episode. We recently had the Dreaming Whilst Black cast and writer of the series. So we had Danny Mosley, who is the star of the series, alongside Ali Hughes, who is a writer. And he's been along the whole journey of the show from the sort of the web series in towards today, where the series is now fully fledged and it's in its second season, which is a mammoth effort and success when you consider how difficult it is to get black stories through the door and into the big time. And I think they've done a phenomenal job doing so. Absolutely. I think season one served as like an entry to Kwabena's world, played by Johnny Salmon, who's just a talented man, really talented mind, really creative, really funny. And season two is like a further delve into their journey. Manny, do you want to talk to us quickly about your sort of experience hosting and your experience speaking to the talents that came onto the pod?
Yeah, shout out to Danny Mosley and Ali Hughes. I think just shout out to Sophie as well, works for BBC, that we're talking with her. She's the one that hooked up the interview for us. So big up them. Yeah, it was really fun speaking to them.
Just also, to mention Sabrina as well.
Sabrina. Shout out Sabrina.
She was the one that dropped us a message and said, oh yeah, we want you guys to do it. She's really cool and she's lovely. And she's supposed to come on the pod.
Friend of the show. Soon to be guest on the show.
Yeah,
it was great talking to them. I think I was really excited to speak to Amy Mosley, but also really excited to speak to Ali Hughes, because I don't think we've had a writer on a TV show or even I don't think we have a writer at all.
Not on the pod.
Well,
they might like delve in.
Yeah.
You know, like sometimes you have someone who's a director and a producer and a writer, but he's literally
just a writer. So I was excited to speak to him in terms of, like, because there's a new perspective in terms of film and TV and his approach to writing and also how he got into the industry. And it was fun. It was interesting.
He's very funny as well.
He is actually like a really, it makes sense that he writes the,
yeah,
he's more focused on the comedy side of things as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we made a lot of jokes about
white boy jokes
about his ethnicity.
He took it on the chin.
So yeah, shout out to him, man. But yeah, it was great. It was nice to hear in terms of like how the whole team and cast and even the people that were shouting out, the people that were doing makeup, the people that were doing hair, and them not shouting out other writers. You can tell there's a real community and family feel within people that work in the Dreaming Whilst Black. So that's great to see, great to hear. So hopefully when season three does come around in the future, which it should do, it'll be nice to have some more of them on the pod, just talk about it a bit more. Or even seeing some of them working in other stuff. I know Ali mentioned that him, I might not be able to say it, but it'll be great to see them do other stuff. Yeah.
Did he say it on the pod?
No.
I said it to you behind closed doors.
Yeah, but I think it should be fine, but I don't want to risk it.
Yeah, no, it's not worth the risk. Fair play, man. I think you did a great job. And I think what's important about the show is now spreading awareness, because we was at the event the other day, luckily. And I think the interesting thing was the guy that's behind, I think the production company for the series, was just talking about how important like those first 14 days are for the show in terms of longevity, in terms of how much push we can get behind it to show the BBC, to show A24 that it's worth backing. And A24 backing the series is really huge. Because A24 has become, it still has the indie vibe, but it's become a major.
Yeah.
A major publication, a major studio within the realms of film and TV, so an important one for sure. Hush, you was there as well. What did you make of the evening? What did you make of the series? Is there anything about the series that you really enjoy specifically from the episodes you've seen?
I think it was I think especially with season two, it's definitely, I didn't expect it to have as much progression as it did. Mm. Okay, I thought it would just carry on, you know, with the same vibe, but they actually kind of like delved into like certain storylines. Okay, like really like and super well as well. I think meeting the cast, the rest of the cast, on the event day, gave me everything that you guys just said about how like close they are and how kind of like the chemistry was like this. You know what I mean? It was so smooth and stuff. And I think the guy that spoke about the production stuff is, I think the copy is called Bounce. I think it's called Bounce. Bounce Entertainment.
Might be Big Deal. Big Deal Entertainment.
Maybe, yeah.
I think it's
Big
Deal.
Oh, yeah. I saw them kind of at the bar, and all of them, there was like nine of them, they were all hugging and smiling and laughing and everything. And I was like, man, it's such a good vibe, bro. Mm. You know what I mean? So the second season for me just accentuated that even more, bro. Like everyone seemed like they knew their role, and I reckon we could have interviewed anybody from the cast and had a great interview, man.
Yeah, I agree.
Overall, if you haven't seen it, please do go watch it. It is super dope. And obviously, Showtime picked it up as well, which is huge. You know, so yeah, man.
Right. Guys, you're right. Yeah, it's a Big Deal Films. It's a production company.
My brother, huh?
Yeah, listen, shout out AI, by the way. Like, just
we are not shouting out AI.
Yeah, hey, listen, boys, listen, you understand? Skynet is around the corner, so like, if you man better get on board, you man better just start like bigging it up as much as you can.
No. When there's
use it. But Skynet, the biggest advice I say is just use it sensibly.
Skynet, if you're listening, I'm on your side.
Don't use it for the beauty of the arts, is the only thing I'd say. That's what we're trying to celebrate here. Dreaming was about season two takes the story forward. Might as well get into like a mini quick review of just season two.
Yeah.
Post credit scene podcast, 4 HQ original, lovers of film, TV and theatre. Well, Sam's here, Manny's here.
Bang.
Another episode. That was like the quickest intro ever, by the way. I think season two does a really good job of, as you said, progressing in the sense of moving the story of the characters forward, moving them on from where they were in season one. So like Quibena's passion of filmmaking, but also the stumbling blocks that come with trying to progress as a black man in the industry and trying to tell stories that are true and honest to him. And I think it's a conflict that we all kind of face in different ways as being like, you want to progress your career, you want to progress your opportunities, but then you also have the idea of trying to have integrity in terms of who you are and what you believe and what you want to stand for. And I think that's something that Quibena really has to face in season two. It's like, do you want to succeed or do you want to stand by what you believe in? Which is it's a real relatable situation for people, mostly I guess in the creative industry, but then all aspects of life, professionally as well as personally. So I think that was really enjoyable about season two. But season two also dives into like the rest of the cast and the characters, like Maurice and Fumi's relationship is hilarious, and they're progressing in parenthood and trying to give the best opportunities they can for their child. Their child is called Maiwa. It delves into the duality slightly more. Season one does it more, but the duality of like dual heritage and raising children from different backgrounds, and I found that so interesting as well. And of course we have Amy's a great character. And some of those scenes with
her sister,
one, but two, I don't know, I find them funny, but the scene with the white woman and
Fiona.
And people were kissing their teeth, and I get it, but like, they're actually taking the piss out of her. If you can see the fact they're taking the piss out of her, I'm not mocking us, it's more like taking the piss out of white people for appropriating black culture and almost mimicking or taking the piss out of us. Then you'll enjoy the scene. You'll enjoy those moments, and that's what I really enjoyed about season two. Anything for you?
That you haven't really touched on, because it's pretty much everything I was going to say. Just to add on the Fiona stuff, I think those are some of my favourite scenes, because I just think that she's super funny. And mainly because there's such a level of awareness with everybody in the room that she's like, bro, like, this is foolishness, but she just carries on. One thing that they also do that's really well in the show is that I think they use characters or guest characters on there really well. Like, for example, RS, I can't remember his real name, apologies, that's, he's on like three episodes, but I think like the use of him, of his character, is so brilliant. Rudolph, who plays the main lead in the show that Quibena is directing, I feel like he has one of my favorite scenes on the show when he's talking to Aquaban and telling him like, bro, I've been working in the industry for 30 years and every time I've always been left.
That was his story. That's literally his story. Yeah, you could tell.
There's so much passion in it, but even him telling Aquaban is like, every time I've been feeling like I've been pushed to the side and now I'm seeing you here and you're doing the exact same thing or you drank the Kool-Aid. And it's like, it just encapsulated what the struggles or the conflict that Kobena had throughout that season working in that industry in terms of like, I want to be true to myself. I want to be true to the art. I want to be true to my blackness, but I'm working for the company and working for the men. I still have to do what they say. And it's interesting, especially how it ends. I don't want to spoil it for you because you haven't watched it. I'm so glad that scene happens in terms of what potentially means for season three. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I feel like they've done a good job highlighting certain things and then the way that they approached it as well.
Fair dues. Do you want to go first? Anything you've like watched lately that caught your eye or that didn't catch your eye? Something that might not have interested you. I don't know.
I haven't started it yet, but I'm about to get into Peacemaker season two.
How did you find season one?
I really liked it, but at the time, this is what I'm going to say. I'm going to be very honest. I didn't respect it.
Why?
Okay. Because I just didn't respect DC in general then, okay? But
do you know what you do?
Respected James Gunn. So I liked it, right? But I was like, I didn't appreciate it for what it was. I wasn't watching it. I wasn't
You don't look impressed.
It. You know what I mean?
This guy, man.
Hold up, man.
This
okay?
is doing the
so I rewatched it.
Thing that I've seen over the past year when like Drake or Kendrick stands can't. Like anytime, like if a Kendrick stand a Drake drops something, every time they have to trash it. If a Drake stand, that's what you do with DC.
And I've said multiple times, okay, on this pod, like I have a closer affiliation with DC. Okay, like those were the comics that I was reading.
Yeah, right.
I promise you. Run it back here. I've always said.
You have said that.
Like,
I just wanted to get that off.
Yeah. No, that's calm.
Are you going to be using that?
Yeah. And thinking DC had way better cartoons as well. Do you know what I mean? Okay.
Oh, yeah,
so I was like super. So I'm overly critical of them. Well, I just rewatched Peacemaker season one and Suicide Squad. Okay, to obviously prep for Peacemaker. Yeah, bro. Honestly, man, I don't know why we even had that conversation about Superman and James Gunn. About is he totally gonna do this for everything? Because it was very. It's a very different tone. You know what I mean? Okay, it is still like you know playful and stuff. But it's giving more like Deadpool.
Dark though, a little bit.
Yeah,
it's
bro. Very dark like, it's gory. Do you know what I mean? And there's so many ethical questions in Peacemaker. Do you know what I'm saying? Okay, so it's like, which is obviously the whole point of him. Do you know what I mean? But yeah, no, I think it might be one of my series of the year. But I need to obviously watch season two, so I'm gonna lock in to this week, give it a watch, finish it off, and then yeah, we'll be back in the game. But I saw a few interviews with John Cena, and like he was saying that he wasn't the first choice for it, also in James Gunn's, and apparently it was Dave.
Batista.
Yeah. You know, apparently, he yeah, go on.
So, you know what's crazy? I know it's easy to say because you've now watched John Cena as Peacemaker, but it's now feeling like one of those roles that I can't see anyone else do.
Yeah. But he even said, like, that it helped him that James told him that he wasn't the first choice because it's like, all right, cool. Let me show you that I can be first choice, bro. Do you know what I'm saying? And,
yeah.
And he's embodied it. And Cena's funny, bro.
Yeah.
Cena's funny, yeah, bro. He's funny. There's a scene, okay, in Suicide Squad where they all get like drunk and stuff, and they're at some bar. I mean, he's yeah, and he's doing this.
Yeah,
like yo, we did.
I've seen that used as a meme so many times.
So funny, bro. Do you know what I'm saying? But like, yeah. So, but just in general, it doing this little recap. James Gunn has got me, like, he's got me way more confident now in just the next 10 years. Do you know what I'm saying? Because, like, that's, for me, that's two or all three different tones now that we've seen from him. But I get that why we did it for Superman, because it's such a big movie. But, yeah.
Well, that was you.
It was all of us.
No, it was you.
What do you mean?
It was literally your segment. I remember the pod, and you literally, that was your part of the pod where you're, like, you're not sure if he can translate. Or, like, differentiate tones, which is an understandable question to ask, only because Guardians and Suicide and parts of Peacemaker, parts of it, have a similar tone and similar language used in terms visual language, especially like the color palettes used and how wacky and quirky his stories can be. And then when you intertwine that with his like love for music and how he puts all of his love for music into his art.
You can see
where the questions would come. I think Peacemaker as a whole just has a lot more adult themes, so it's not restricted by like a 12 age restriction or anything like that. You can see it's made for adults. It's made for 18 plus, if not 15, at least 18.
I think it's 18. I think it's quite.
But there's some sexual scenes in there. There's lots of like alcohol. There's lots of violence and gory violence in that. Season 2 delves into a lot more philosophical and ideological themes and ideas around Peacemaker as a character, but they use it through the world. And that's where I'd go with that without spoiling it for you. I think the finale was disappointing, but the season as a whole, I really enjoyed it. There's some really good episodes. I think episodes 6 and 7 are some of the best of the season. I said I didn't think Peacemaker would be for me because of the James Gunn thing. Mm. It's my favourite James Gunn project. Though I didn't like the final, I didn't love the final episode of season 2.
Do you know what I wanted to say was, it was to touch back on your point about James Gunn tonally. I wanted to double check to make sure. Have you guys seen Brightburn?
No,
I haven't seen it yet. Was that James Gunn as well?
He's a producer on it. Okay. It was 2019.
It's a Superman thing.
Sort of. So yeah, you get the idea. Because it's a very dark like movie. So like, I remember when I first watched that and I didn't realise he had done that. When I found out that he'd done that, that's kind of what also gave me faith about like DC, because I know DC is just a lot more darker than it is than Marvel. So like when having that in the back of my mind, I've always had been like, yeah, it's going to be calm with him.
He spoke about that in an interview because he was talking about how like Superman is his first superhero film. And then they were like, "What are you fucking talking about?" And then he was like, "Guardians, they're not superheroes. They're fucking space thing police, you know." And then he was talking about how like
Brightburn
is like an anti-hero. Like it's not an actual.
No, it's not anti-hero. It's a villain.
There's
no anti there.
Yeah,
mate.
But then obviously, you know, he was like, yeah, if he's Superman, is the first time that he has to do things in a certain tone or a certain way because it is a superhero and it's a traditional superhero, probably the most traditional
most
superhero of all time. You know what I mean? But that's what I've been trying to get into that bag. And then I've been slowly catching up with a bunch of series and stuff that I wasn't able to watch over the past couple of months. Everything that we've previously spoken about, mainly because I want to get ready for our end of year episode. So I caught up with I watched like Adolescence, other stuff that we've said. But yeah, it's all good.
Guys, are you watching Slow Horses?
Come on, man.
That's his bag, fam.
It's amazing, man.
It's fucking good.
I just love that show.
See, I want to watch that, yeah. 5 seasons, though.
It's only six
episodes a season.
And I
never knew that.
6.
Yeah, what? Literally.
I never.
That's part of the reason. Although they still deserve the credit, it's part of the reason why they can like get a season out pretty much every year.
I never do that.
And also, like, it's also
I can look in now.
It's also why like it never feels like it's like a filler episode. It never feels empty.
It just gets to the point.
Literally.
I can look into that.
Yeah, but I've watched the first episode. I think I need to get over it. I didn't like the first episode.
Watch it again. I think watch it again with not like a bias, but like this. Once you're into the world, it's kind of hard to like get out. And I kind of get your point.
Yeah.
But the series also has, because it tonally it can be a bit jarring. And I think once you're used to the tone of the series, and I like the fact it's kind of like a flip on what you get from the typical spy genre where like everything's so stern and serious, it still has that as you get along. Trust me, the further you get into it, it gets quite dark, gets quite political, it has a lot of things to say. And the writer of the books always writes within the time period that he's living in, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So what he's putting in the series is a reflection of the time that he was writing in. So for example, season 5 is a reflection of like the period where 2016, 17, 15 maybe, where we were having the debates around Brexit.
Okay.
And that's present, kind of evident with season 5.
Wow.
But then it still feels kind of relevant
today.
Like today.
Yeah, yeah.
And season 5 kind of kicks off with like a crazy bang. It's a really good show, man. Really
Does
good.
Gary look like he's having fun?
I'd go as far as to say is you can tell he's having too much fun.
He's taking a piss.
Yeah,
his character.
At one point, we need to do like a top 10 actors list.
Yeah,
even if it's not like a cemented one, it'd be nice to just talk about some actors that I feel like should be in a conversation of.
He's fucking phenomenal.
Yeah, that's something we can put in the bank, Manny.
If you compared this role, yeah, to, cool. If you compare this role to like, I don't know, his role in he's in one of the not Jurassic. He's in one of the Planet of the Apes movies, no?
Yes.
Yes. He's cold in that.
And then compare it to something like The Dark Knight. Like just his character in this series.
I've never seen him play something like this.
It's phenomenal.
I'm generally thinking.
But I feel like a lot of his roles are just different.
Oh, very different. Yeah.
Yeah, but this is like noise.
Did he do the King's Speech one? Was it? No. He done. He was the Prime Minister. No? What was he again? He was the King or something.
Churchill.
Yeah.
He killed that one too.
I was gonna say that because I feel like a lot of his roles, there's some sort of serious element to it. Whereas here, even though there are parts where he has to be serious, he's so laid back. It's almost unrecognizable. Like Gary Oldman is playing this kind of character.
Mm.
Best character in the show, easy.
Oh yeah,
that's so good.
He's definitely a generational talent.
He might be my top five.
I'm not saying anything.
I'm not saying it right now.
You're going a bit early there, mate.
I don't think so. You know.
Well, of all time, or do you mean British?
Top 10.
Yeah.
if I'm thinking of
I get it
as well.
Yeah,
he might be, because his filmography is extensive, and I feel like he's one of the most diverse actors that I've enjoyed. I think he is in my top 10.
I'm pretty sure like the first film that the first film that like brought him like limelight was Leon. Like that's, I just tells you that he's been in the game for a minute. Long
time. Shout out to
What's that? Not the early thing, 90s.
Yeah, 2000. I think it's 1994. Top of my head, Assassin film.
Fucking hell.
With Natalie Portman as a kid.
Oh bloody hell!
Shout out to his sister as well, Big Mo.
Oh yeah, I found out about who posted that. No, someone had it on a profile as a fun fact from EastEnders.
Come on,
you never watched EastEnders?
Neither do I. Don't
in my mind. Life.
You've never watched EastEnders?
I know Cats Later, and I know.
Nah, but you've never watched EastEnders.
I've never volunteered.
Dirty Den.
Phil Mitchell?
Don't do that because you know who Phil Mitchell is.
Yeah, that's
no, I'm saying like I know
you
his
knew,
name.
You knew who Mitchell is.
That I know
is
his name, yeah.
Crazy.
I've never sat down by myself to watch that show.
Man,
I think
that's peak childhood, man.
Bro, I'm sorry. I feel like
as Brits.
as a British citizen.
with an England flag.
bro, I'm sorry. You have to get out of the country.
bro, wallahi, on my mother's life here.
Stop the boats.
I literally, if he found out 2 weeks ago that Phil Mitchell is not his real name, Charles told me that. Charles watches it.
Oh yeah, Charles is the
Charles
oldest I know.
Every day.
I've stopped now.
He can tell, like, but it's never ending, isn't it? It's like every day, nearly, no?
Yeah, that's long.
It's like four, five.
It's so problem. Same thing with Emmerdale. Same thing with Coronation Street.
My one was Coronation Street, right?
And Bangle.
Only reason why is because The Simpsons was on at 6 p.m. and then 6:30 yeah. was Coronation Street.
No,
so sometimes
no.
I'm just leaving it on.
Oh. Hollyoaks was 6:30.
Knowledge.
Emmerdale was 7 and Coronation Street was 7:30.
You're right.
Steve's mum Liz was a good meal still.
Yeah, okay.
But it wasn't always on 7:30 because I remember
sometimes 8 o'clock.
Yeah, because EastEnders went 8 o'clock and 7:30. So sometimes EastEnders on 8 o'clock.
Flip it.
Yeah, they'll flip around.
Like, we need to do a soap episode. Do you know? Yeah, we're on season 4 now. Yeah, episode 37. Okay, whatever it is. There's still a lot that we could talk about. You know,
yeah, of course.
There's still so much that we have never spoken about. Even we still haven't done a reality TV episode.
That's Bissell and Jason.
yeah, I know. Yeah. A two-man pod. They're gonna kill that.
They can get a guest for that.
Yeah.
Wait, you might never watch Jersey Shore growing up.
Of course.
No. Do you know what?
You're lying.
I've seen like clips. I've never sat down and watched an episode. I don't like reality TV shows. Will never be for me.
Love is Blind.
See, this is where you become artsy.
It's not artsy. No,
I'm not. Don't buy it.
The thing is, yeah, I get where people enjoy this stuff, like the drama and all that.
Yeah,
it's just not for me.
No,
the only time I ever like, even like with Love Island, it's always been over Babe. That's the only times I ever watched it.
Made in Chelsea.
Fuck no.
I was locked in.
What am I going to watch Made in Chelsea?
I was locked into that for years.
There was even one Asian one. Was like I think they were Indian.
Desi Rascals.
No, something else.
That's brazy.
or something else.
Are you sure? What
did you call it?
Desi Rascals.
No, it definitely wasn't that. This is like 2014, 2015 when I watched it.
Yeah, yeah. It has to be that, surely.
There will be other ones. It doesn't matter right now. We can move on. But yeah, reality TV shows and me don't go together, bro.
Yeah, you know something? I am there with you. I mean, I watched Jersey Shore when I was a kid, when it first came out because of the hype. But
it's not for me. I think the only one that I might have watched by myself, like, might have been Big Brother.
Yeah, I think everyone did.
Oh, yeah.
And that was like the original.
Yeah.
That's original TV show. Yeah. That's
fair enough. When there was the drama with Triple Shetty. I remember that one.
Bro, my favorite one is the drama with the girl that was like, he hit me, but no one touched her.
I saw that on the news. I never watched it.
What?
Yeah.
Bro, that was crazy. Bro, she literally said, like, this guy was like, oh, yeah, boom, boom, boom. Like,
yeah.
Like shadow boxing. Yeah. And then she was like, yo, like, he banged me, bro. Okay.
Yeah, literally, you know what I mean? She made out. Like, yeah.
And then she came out, and then she was like, he definitely banged me, yeah. And then they were like, bro, look. And then she went,
yeah, and we're on him. And then I think one of the girls were in the room, and Big Brother was like, why do you think he hasn't been kicked out? I was like, oh, so she's lying.
Yeah, yeah, that's prime TV, though. That could never happen now, you know. That could never happen now.
Damn, with the way this country's going, bro. all the problematic shit is coming back.
Yeah.
I'm telling you right now, all the problematic shit is coming back.
Facts.
What would you guys be interested in hearing about? I've got a list of options for you.
Go on.
Him.
Mm-hmm.
The Smashing Machine.
I watched that recently, actually. Let's talk about that.
Or House of Guinness.
Oh, I watched that recently as well.
I want to hear about House of Guinness.
Actually, yeah, like, let's go House of Guinness first. Yeah, for sure.
You don't want me to cuss out Slim him quickly? That's fine.
No, do it. I can save him.
I've watched both of him.
And you know what? Him's not even... Let's do him.
Let's do him.
Because the film is not that bad. It fucking stops. It's like the first third of the movie is like moving, and it's interesting because you're getting to know Cam K's character, played by Tyreek Rivers.
Yeah.
And he does a good job. Him and Marlon Wayans are good. Mm. The acting, for the most part,
I agree,
is good. The first third, super interesting. He's getting towards Marlon Wayans is what's his character's name? It's gone already.
Isaiah White.
Progressing towards him becoming a mentor for Cam Cade. It's really interesting. It's spooky. It's shot beautifully. And then it just stops. Like, the film stops moving.
The writing falls.
Nothing happens.
Is this the
writing falls?
Did the director write it as well?
I'm
not sure.
Director is Justin Tipping, and the writer, it's not giving me that.
Is this his first film?
I don't think it is. I'm going to double check right now.
I think it's his first, but he's a rookie, if you like.
Yeah, guys, I agree with you, like, strongly. I actually think it tips off earlier. Like I think, like, the characters, I saw someone say this, okay, as I was walking out, so shout out to you because I'm still in this, all right? But they were like, it felt like the actors were method acting when there was no method needed in the acting.
Bro.
And I was like, rah.
I'm seeing Guap Dad 4000 is in the film. I don't got to watch this. I don't have to watch this.
Okay.
Why is he in the film?
But like,
And someone glocks that.
Sorry, huh?
So yeah, crazy.
Someone, there's a funny scene in the movie. And someone said to me, like, why is he glocking the... Anyway, yeah, let me not pause in it.
I think you're right. Like, I think it made me hate the concept of the film when that was probably the only unique part of the film.
Yeah.
But then because it tails off, okay, you go, well, that was a bit ass.
I hate to say it because I get the premise. There's just a whole load of, like, interesting themes which aren't, like, really explored. So, like, I like the concept of the way the movie dives into, like, the body horror of NFL, because that's never really thought about. Like the physical duration and the physical harm that's done to the bodies, some of the CTE that's possible in the sport when you're clashing heads, when you're clashing bodies, and what that does to you. That is physical horror in of itself, and the way they portrayed that was really cool.
Yeah.
But then, like, that's it. It's like, it looks good, the acting's good, the body horror idea is good, but, like, the actual pertinent themes of, like, the way, in a sense, NFL players are like slaves for these owners, and that's like a literal thing where, like, a lot of the owners are white American men who can trade and sell these majority at least young black men as they please, bring them back in, trade them,
cut them off when they need
all that sort of stuff, and how they're sort of at the mercy of these men. Now, of course, they're getting paid substantial amount of money. But the physical harm that's being done and the control and the manipulation of it all is what the movie's trying to say. But, like, it just stopped, and it wasn't entertaining. It just stops becoming interesting after like that first part of the movie, and then it rushes towards the end. So like it stops, and then boom, by the time you know it, you're at the final scene, and it's like, this didn't feel earned. Mm-hmm. Even though that was like a climactic scene, and like if the movie was more interesting, it could have been great. It just like sped there. It's like you've rushed towards the
finish line. Those are kind of the worst films, aren't they? Like where you feel like it could have been great.
I feel like a lot was cut out, potentially.
Have you seen Foxcatcher?
No.
I want to watch
with,
that.
With Steve Carell and Channing Tatum. That film is fucking dark.
It's on my list to watch.
But that film is the film that made me say Steve Carell's nuts. I was like, yeah, because he was terrifying in that film, bro. He was absolutely fucking what people said about that was that it wasn't physically intense enough, right? But the writing was so dark. Okay, right. Whereas, like, I feel like him could have used more of that, like more of like the storytelling part of what the theme actually was, right? Whereas, like, in Foxcatcher, it was literally written to scare the fuck out of you.
Okay.
With your like imagination just like running wild. Mm. And it was, yeah, because obviously like Channing Tatum was like a big U.
I remember like it came out after the whole like I don't call it
wrestling scandal.
Not even wrestling scandal, the whole like pretty boy phase as well of like Channing Tatum. It was like now he's turning into the serious roles. The same thing with Steve Carell, because it's like, it's right, I think, in the middle of The Office. You're like, he's doing this?
Yeah. But obviously like that whole film is like based around like the power, dynamic in sports. You know, how like coaches can hold like your whole career.
Literally.
Do you know what I'm saying? Okay, and so it's similar themes. Okay, but obviously they try to explore it more visually. You know, rather than like a real story.
Him wasn't scary either.
Yeah.
Is it supposed to be, or was it not like a thriller?
I don't think it was meant to be.
But was it supposed to be?
Was it?
Because it's meant to be a horror.
It's been marketed as a horror.
It's been sold as a horror.
It's been everywhere though. That the marketing was
a mess.
It's not scary.
The marketing though, I can't lie, it's kind of like, no one says.
They've done so many junkets.
Yeah,
so many interviews.
It's not scary. Yeah. No.
I feel like at one point it felt like it was supposed to be a Jordan Peele like actual film. And
it was.
And then halfway through you find like it's not.
It was never Jordan Peele film. He just bought it.
So he wanted weapons.
Weapons, yeah.
And then he lost weapons. And then him was the back four.
Yeah, but it's the same with Dev Patel's film,
Monkey Man.
Monkey Man, like same thing. Film is written and directed. When
just need someone to produce. Just need someone to distribute and produce it.
Yeah, sure.
Which Universal did. Shout out to them. Smashing Machine, yeah. Do you want to go off?
First of all, The Rock's best acting performance I've ever watched. Emily Blunt was the best person in that film.
Why was it The Rock's best role for you?
It was intentional. Like he felt intentional. He felt like he studied his character like pretty well. I don't know much about Mark Kerr, who the story's about, you know, who's one of like the pioneers of like what the UFC became in regards to a financial and raw standpoint, but I felt like I did know him, you know what I'm saying, okay, just through the Rock's thing. And after I watched the film, I watched bare interviews of Mark Kerr, and I was like, he did study him, because a lot of his like mannerisms, the way he spoke, the way he uses his hands to say thank you, or because he's a big U, but he was very soft spoken, you know, and you can see that. Do you know what I mean? So I was like, okay, he took this role like really, really seriously, which I really like. Emily Blunt was absolutely breathtaking. She played, I don't know if you agree with me, she played a very similar role to her role in Oppenheimer, whereas I feel like her role in Oppenheimer, she was a lot smarter and calculated with what she was doing. But tonally, she plays like a parallel version of that. Okay, where like she's his support system in this film, right? But she's also his cancer, you know. And she like every time I feel like Emily is dope, she just goes one whole level higher, and she was freaking awesome, bro. She's honestly, she was the best character for me in that film, for sure. my criticism. Nothing much happens. like, if you don't, if you have no interest in the UFC, if you have no interest in the history of sports and pay, you know, and that kind of stuff, there's not much that happens. Even his story, like Mark, like Mark's story with the drug abuse and stuff, etc. It's cool, but it's not that interesting of a story that we haven't, you know, seen. And then the story is actually a co-lead with Mark Coleman, who's another UFC fighter, right? And they couldn't highlight his story because he had a happy family and everything. It's not like sellable, do you know? But there's a scene at the end with Mark Coleman, which I'm not going to obviously think it's a spoil. That scene where he was like sat there in his change room was beautiful. But he didn't say a word. But it was beautiful because at that moment you realize, this was a co-lead. It wasn't just about Mark's story Mark Kerr's story.
I got what you're saying.
It was a dual story here. Do you know what I'm saying? Okay, but they just couldn't. They had to have like a hook, and Kerr is like a bigger hook because he had a more dramatic life. Mm. But it's a beautifully told story. It's just, is everyone going to be interested in that story? I don't think so. I don't think it's a universal story.
I was going to say, do you think it's his best performance because of his background, like in like wrestling and whatnot? So maybe it's probably easy for him to like slip into a role like this.
No. I just think he acted really well. And I don't think it was ever beyond him to do this. I don't think he's doing anything extraordinary per se, but you can see a lot of time and effort went in to bringing that character to life of Mark Kerr. Just the subtle things about his character, the good and the bad, the nuances, the things that like make him who he was. Because although he's softly spoken, he did have a bit of a temper as well.
He did.
The movie dives into that. And it dives into, I think it's mainly more focused on like the chaotic aspects of his personal life and how that impacts then his professional life, right, and yeah, vice versa. Because his professional definitely impacts his relationship with Dawn Staples, played by Emily Blunt, who's really good. And vice versa, like his personal life then impacts how he performs on the big stage, and that turbulence of the relationship, how like someone can be the thing that makes you thrive and also the thing that takes away your drive, if you like. And I liked that duality of the movie. I just think it lacked, as you said, a bit of a kick. It lacked like a gut punch,
yeah,
or something that would really like hook you emotionally to the story.
Absolutely.
And it kind of rushes through a lot of those key moments. So like him becoming addicted is kind of like, next thing you know, he's taking loads of opioids, and it's like, wait, how did we get there? Like, how did we get to this point so quickly? Do you know what I mean? So for me, that was disappointing. Benny Safdie directs it well, though. It looks good visually as well. Like, he really puts you into that time period of like the late 90s and the early 2000s.
That like orange, like
saturated.
Yeah.
The orange saturated sort of look. So the movie's good. I just think like, if I compare it to the Iron Claw, maybe I shouldn't do so. Because comparing movies is quite like, you know, they're telling different stories. Yeah, but Iron Claw's got the story. It's got the emotional ties that draws you in. But no, he did a really good job. And like, I'm not saying like he's a guaranteed nominee for an Oscar, but I won't be surprised if he gets
it. Was an Oscar bait film, though.
Oh, for sure.
100%. 100%. And like, but I did like his tweet or his post the other day when he was like, it's not about the...
He's done box office numbers enough times. It don't matter.
Yeah.
He's Mr. Box Office. One of them, isn't he?
He's literally Mr. Fucking
so
Box Office.
So people are saying like, it's his biggest flop. So, okay. Like, yeah.
But it's like, that's not what this is for. And people can fucking compare like the... I saw someone... you know, underneath start naming films like Poor Things and you know, etc. If I didn't make 200 mil, bro. Do you know what I mean? All right, and it's like, these are still great films, you know. So like, and I like his reaction that it was about telling the story in like a beautiful way and stuff. And you know, like a nice undertone of the story was how they were part of this tournament, right? And they had to fight like five people to get to this final, right? And to win the whole prize was 200k, and it was all in Japan because at the time the UFC was banned in the US, so the UFC was only being streamed in like South America and blah blah blah. And it tells like a story. Was like, these people are risking their fucking lives. Okay, they're getting mad injuries. Okay, they're breaking stuff. For a possibility of winning 200k, not a guaranteed.
Yeah.
Okay. Whereas like now the fourth undercard in the fucking UFC is getting
200k. Yeah.
Guaranteed. you know. So it was like, so like it was that story as well. Like these man like walked, so obviously you can run.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? And that was beautiful. And that was more Mark Coleman's story, I think. I don't think it was Mark Kerr's story, but I think it was that.
They were the Wu-Tang Clan of the UFC.
Facts. Facts. And then obviously, as we know, which is also true, the tournament, the final of the tournament was the first ever televised Ultimate Fighting, because it wasn't technically with the UFC, but it was televised in the US, which, because it was, the UFC then used it as like an example of like, see, we can
do this.
Yeah, and then obviously they did, but yeah. I like, and I've seen Mark Kerr do a lot of press around it. He was on Jimmy Fallon and stuff and etc. And he seems like a dope guy as well. Do you know what I'm saying? So yeah, man, it was cool. It was dope.
Where are you up to with The Sopranos?
That's a good question.
Hmm? we have an episode to do on it.
Yeah,
and I don't even think we need to have watched it all to do it. I will
finish it by. I'm gonna give myself a date.
It's less of a finish thing. Do you know why? Because I think there's so many interesting things we could do. There's a podcast I love called the Prestige TV Podcast. Yeah. That's my snobbishness, is that TV show that people deem prestige. Maybe that's what my snob thing is. I don't know. But I like that podcast because what they do is obviously delve into some of like the best TV shows of all time that are deemed like the Game of Thrones and the Successions and all that sort of stuff. And they did a really interesting episode quite recently where they picked an episode that would hook anybody into that series. And I think that's a really interesting concept. Like, if you could pick an episode that would get you to watch it for the first time, it's most likely to be within the first season, because if you was picking like episode 3 or season 3, it's like, whoa,
it's too much.
Why did it take
then,
so long to get there? Context, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think it's a really interesting idea. I think something we could maybe not steal. Sorry, yeah, Bill. Sorry, Bill.
Repackage.
Simmons. Sorry, Bill. I think that's a really interesting concept.
I made Jason watched the Battle of the Bastards as his first episode.
That's wild.
It came with
that's insane. Yeah, it's a really good episode to pick, but that's still insane.
That's Loki and a huge L though, because by season 5, when he watches Jon Snow get like murdered, he's like,
he didn't know Jon Snow get murdered though. He wouldn't have known that.
Yeah.
No, but like he would have watched that happen at season 5.
He wasn't watching Thrones. He's never watched it.
No, but I'm saying if you watch Battle of the Bastards first, and then you watch it from the beginning, you get to the part of Jon Snow dying.
Then you know he's coming back. We all knew he was coming back.
Yeah.
We all knew he was coming back. Yeah, I think that's something we should do anyway. Sopranos.
I did say that I would like to do an episode per season for Sopranos.
Actually probably a better way of doing it.
I feel like it deserves that.
How many seasons is it?
Six episodes. The six seasons is the longest one. It's like double the amount, but like it's 13 episodes. Like,
Now TV's fucking great.
Honestly,
Now TV's quite necessary.
And have a nursery pod per episode. Even have a different guest if we want to. But I don't think we need that.
I feel
like an episode per season.
It's a great show.
I was gonna say like I'm not gonna say too much, but like there's that there was one scene that it popped up on my what do you call it on my TL recently. I forgot how funny the show is.
It's hilarious.
What season are you on?
I'm on season 2.
Okay, I think it's season 3. I'm thinking of. There's a scene, it's so funny, of them like walking through the woods. It's so funny.
Oh, people use it as a meme.
It's a meme, yeah, bro.
Are they chasing somebody?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
The interior decorator.
Was funny, bro.
I was laughing so hard.
It's such a serious thing that you're doing right now.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds like shit.
Yeah, 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 yeah. That's funny. I think that's the last episode of season 1.
Yeah.
The last episode of season 1. Mm. Yeah. I really like it. I think episode 5 would have been the college.
That's what they did. Come on, that's what they did. they picked college for understandable reasons.
Yeah. I think that's when you really get into like, oh, okay, this is...
I think it's just more so... finding out who Tony Soprano actually is, and you mean not only just the gangster but also the family side of things.
Yeah,
finding out who Meadow is, and
Meadow as well. That's the episode with the fucking priest.
Oi, that guy, bro.
That's slimy.
That is so
slimy. Slimy.
And I know I haven't even got to the slime yet.
Just
slimy little shit, bro. I actually hate that guy.
Yeah, he's a piece of shit.
I actually hate that guy.
Yeah,
but yeah,
we'll do something on The Sopranos soon. So keep your eyes peeled.
Very soon. I'm done holding up.
Apologies.
No, I will finish it by the end of the month. Do you know what? It's because
right, come on,
hold
bro.
On.
No, okay. Let me give you reasons. Do you know what? Because I've only like the last few months, I've only been watching things in cinema or on my TV monitor, and I don't want to watch The Sopranos and that. Like, I actually want to.
It deserves more.
I actually want to enjoy it. But now I bought a new TV and I put it in my room literally the other day. So nice. I'm gonna sit there and watch it. Yeah, I just haven't had the time.
I do feel like though, like if you have a life where you have to be very productive, binging it is not the way to go forward because you could be there for a while. Like,
yeah, I can't
like,
binge it.
There's like, especially I think season, for me, I think season four is five that you could go one episode off another nonstop.
Yeah. I'd stop myself watching it though.
I still have The Wire as a better show, but
you know, it's like my snobbiness is that I accept that, like that's the one that you
no, but you are a snob.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. Like
the one snob.
Yeah,
one thing.
The one thing that I'll bend my will to is that I think Sopranos is the GOAT. Yeah. But if you come in, it's like Messi Ronaldo. If you told me him, I'm like,
no, you can't compare The Wire. The Wire is actually the Messi of it.
I agree. I agree to that.
Okay.
I agree to that.
I think The Sopranos is Ronaldo.
Yeah, but okay, sometimes. Yeah.
So basically, it's all Dwight's clearly
Messi. Yeah.
No. It's not clearly.
I'm gonna down the hill. Messi's clearly better than Ronaldo.
Oh, that he I is. Know. That I know. But that's what I'm trying to say. Like, that's why Loki at the same time it's hard to compare like that because obviously Messi's the GOAT and it's undeniably.
So for you, Dwight and Sopranos more like Cristiano Ronaldo, Neymar.
Yeah.
Okay, that's crazy. Yeah. He's rage baiting.
I'm agreeing.
I think it would be interesting to do an episode on also just like maybe breaking down what prestige TV is because it's like, although we may use these words on the pod and we understand it, audiences might not necessarily understand the context behind it and why that's even a thing. Just like you have like film bro movies, like why is prestige TV
a thing? Yeah.
We should do that because we done the episode on the what is a class actor? What actor?
Yeah, and you got slaughtered. They got slaughtered
because that was pretty funny.
And even in this era where like I think we're getting less prestige TV.
Yeah,
are we?
I think so.
I think we are, man. I think
we're getting loads of TV. Yeah. We're getting loads of series.
When you say era, what time period are we talking?
I say like streaming era. So
as of right now.
I say from let's say the 2000s. And I think one thing about prestige TV, also need to think about the time that it's in. I think there's like a lot of TV shows that if they came out in the early 2000s, it might be looked at as prestige TV.
I disagree with you completely.
What, that if some things that come out now...
Right, no, that we're getting less.
Succession?
I feel like...
That's what I need to think of the era. Like, there's a lot of TV shows that come out recently or in recent years that if they came out in the early 2000s
like
or mid-2000s...
I have interest.
These are the ones that I won't... say that prestige TV, but I feel like if they came out before, they'll be looked at prestige TV. I think The Morning Show might be one of them.
I get it.
I think The Morning Show.
I get
show,
it. And, yeah, I get you.
I think The Morning Show will be looked at.
Because of the themes and the way.
Well, I think to an extent, even My Friends and Neighbours.
Your Friends and Neighbours.
My Friends and Neighbours.
I think it thematically is, but quality-wise just lacks.
This is what I'm going to add. I'm saying that if these shows came out in the early 2000s, I think they'll be looked at in that way. But I think because we're in an era now where we've seen that level of quality, there needs to be a jump in certain areas. I feel like prestige TV or prestige TV because like they were just that level of quality was brand new to TV shows at the time. Now we get quite a lot of quality TV shows right now, but I wouldn't classify all of them prestige TV because I feel like when you look at something like a Succession and then I compare it to The Morning Show, I love The Morning Show, but I think there's like a quality difference.
Yeah.
So I would say like Succession is prestige TV, and I feel like The Morning Show isn't, but it would have been if it came out like 20 years ago.
That's a discussion to be had.
But I do feel like every 2-3 years we get a show that enters into that, what do you call it, conversation. Whether, as in like throughout its lifeline.
Mm.
So like after, let's say, The Wire and Sopranos.
I think after
finish,
like the game, let's say after the Game of Thrones.
No, because no, I would say that, what do you call it, Better Call Saul is prestige
it
TV.
Is. Okay,
no,
yeah,
no,
yeah.
So that continues then after it, and then once that finishes, you get Succession. Then once that finishes, you get Severance. Like we seem trying to say, there's always something coming.
No, there's definitely like, but I don't think like if I compare it to like 2000s, what we call prestige TV is like Mad Men, The Wire, Sopranos. What else was there? Game of Thrones came out a bit after that.
Westworld season one would kind of fall into that.
But it fell off. It was definitely looked at as...
You've got shows like The Shield from the early 2000s. You've got Oz.
But Prison Break would have been looked at as prestige TV.
Maybe, you know.
Prison Break.
Maybe.
And
really?
100%.
I think the first season especially...
I think because of the concept. It's so like...
Yeah, when it first came out... And
it's so radical in the concept.
And this goes back to my point in terms of like... I'm not saying that TV, we get a lot more TV shows now. I think, like, if you want
to
say,
it's harder to differentiate.
Yeah, and I feel like there has to be a bigger differentiator or a bigger gap in terms of like
the entry point, because there's a lot
of TV shows that have unique concepts.
Narcos, for example.
That's not prestige.
No, that's what I'm trying to say. It's not prestige. But it's like,
but if it came out 20 years ago, I would have looked at as prestige TV. There's one that was on Amazon Prime. The one that Jonathan Nolan produced. I can't remember.
Fallout.
Not that one. Fuck that one.
there's
another one. I can't remember. It's kind of flop one. Conceptually came out 15, 20 years ago. It might be looked at something that might be edging towards prestige TV. Because it comes out in this era, I don't think you look at it that way. Again, I feel like if The Sopranos came out now exactly the same way, we won't look at it the same because we've seen The Sopranos. We won't.
I think certain things will always stand the test of time.
No,
and
but
you know, I keep always like bring it back to this. So you know how they say like some footballers they couldn't play it back in this time. I feel like certain like films and TV shows, if they are at a certain level, no matter when they come out.
Yeah, I think you could bring up The Wire today.
Yeah, and it's going to be
standing the test of time.
Yeah.
Because why I'm saying that I can't is because we already have in a situation where a Wire hasn't come out. Then yeah, sure.
That's the point though, no?
Yeah. No, but I'm saying what come out today because we've had The Wire, now we have had other TV shows that have borrowed and taken stuff
like
from The Wire. Damsel in Distress.
I was gonna say, don't say that.
Snowfall.
I'm not saying there's copy and paste. They've taken stuff from the stuff that you can see from TV shows or that's something similar to. I'm not saying the show itself is similar, but I'm saying there's elements. It's like, for example, Odyssey 2001.
Yeah,
you can look at Interstellar, you can look at Gravity, you can look at Arrival and you can see stuff that's been taken.
Yeah, you
from
can see the DNA.
2001. I'm saying if 2000 Odyssey came out now, not being 2000 Odyssey, it's not going to be looked at the same way as 2000 Odyssey came out in the 60s. Not because the quality is different, because there's been so much since then that's already borrowed from that. But it doesn't feel as new.
But my only thing to that is you don't know, unless the thing actually arrives, you don't know if there's anything else that's going to follow that does it similar.
Yeah.
So I think I get what you're saying, but like you have to have it for something else to take from it.
Yeah.
And I don't think any of the shows that have even taken from it, like let's say Snowfall, which I think is a good show. Quality wise, I think for me it's the themes. The themes are the key thing for me to deciding how prestigious something is, and then the rest follows, like the acting and how well it's produced and the cinematography. All that stuff really matters, but the themes really matter. I think that's maybe we don't get Snowfall without The Wire, right? That's kind of what you was kind of like leading towards.
I think the version of Snowfall that we get would not be the version of Snowfall that
is without
The Wire. And my argument is not necessarily that. It's a like for like comparison.
No, I get you.
It's just more so like when I said the Sopranos shop today, it wouldn't be looked at the same, not because of the quality.
I think the era definitely matters though.
Like, yeah, 100%, yeah.
Because it's just more so like part of the impact that The Wire, The Sopranos.
Is the time that it was made.
Is the timing that it dropped.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
That's a reflection of that particular period.
And also the fact that on the back of them not doing this, other TV shows have now
influenced it.
So if now, like a copy for paste, Sopranos drops today, it's not going to have the same. It's not going to have the same.
But you don't even get like today. Mafia stories just don't matter anymore. The concept of the mafia,
it's died.
It doesn't exist. Whereas
even in films,
and The Sopranos captures like the back end of it when it was already on the decline, but like kind of like makes you think that it's not within the context of the show. Whereas really, in real life, the mafia was like coming towards the back end of it because. The whole like concept of them being recorded when they're speaking about what they're doing and snitching and all that sort of thing.
And corporations as well. Like, you'll see Ed Sopranos about like it touches on like that kind of stuff as well.
Yeah, I get you. But The Pit is one that I'd say is prestige.
Prestige.
Watch The Pit.
That's the medical drama.
Banger. It's the best show of the year for me.
All right.
Best show of the year. It's gonna be my number one. That's my.
I'm gonna dive into that.
We should do at one point a draft list and we can only pick like. specific genres. Like, because you mentioned medical dramas. It'll be interesting to see.
You got Grey's and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. A draft of medical dramas or something
ER,
like that.
You got ER as well? ER, I've never watched ER or Grey's, but I've heard great things.
Do you know the only thing the only thing medical that I really watched is Scrubs.
Scrubs, yeah, same.
I can't lie, Scrubs is amazing.
Is that like a comedy?
It's a comedy, but there are elements of it where it can get serious.
No, of course.
No, it definitely gets serious.
But comedy and darkness go hand in hand.
Yeah,
but it's very much like what you would have like a sitcom.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But again, as well, you know something, it fits to what you want to say, and it fits actually that era. I think about it because it kind of like end of 2000s, 2010s, the latest seasons aren't as well, but it's also like a change in like the atmosphere of like just life.
The world.
Yeah.
Oh, 100%.
So then like when I think about it, all my favorite seasons from Scrubs are literally before the 2010s.
But they also like just be here. They done a major shift. Like it wasn't like a subtle change, bro. Like even like the lighting change, the way that it was shot changed completely. Okay, all of the scenes that we had previously, why it felt like a sitcom is because you only saw like seven rooms. Whereas like now you're seeing like a whole lot more, and then also they brought in the whole like a young tech people quick
cast, yeah.
Dave Franco,
was
in it as well in like the new part of it. Do you know what I'm saying? It was very like they tried to adapt quickly, but lost. I think anyway, they lost a lot of the soul of it.
The soul went.
Quick one. What was your favorite episode of Scrubs? I feel like it's only one answer.
Okay. Don't do that.
Randy, could you put it on charge for me, please?
Yes.
Favorite episode of Scrubs?
Oh, bro, that's crazy.
That's crazy. There's not one answer. Oh, there's so many good ones.
Why? Wait.
Why is it a different thing?
What's your answer?
The one with Brendan Fraser.
Oh, yeah. Brendan Fraser was a cameo.
That episode, bro.
I think that's a top tier.
He's someone's brother again. Who is he again?
He's the main guy, not Dr. Cox.
Or JD?
Not JD. Which one is Dr. Cox again? I think it's Dr. Cox.
Dr. Cox is the one that the approval that he always wanted.
Yeah. But I don't think I'm not sure if it was his brother or his best friend. I think it was his best friend.
No, you're right. It is Dr. Cox's brother because JD's no, it's not.
It's not his brother. I think it's his best friend.
It's his best friend because I remember like
It's his best friend.
Because who's the one that starts dating? I think her name is Elliot. What do you call it? Or that might be her real name. Like the one that the blonde that basically JD had that comes in with that he has a crush on. He's basically love interest, but not his love interest.
Yeah, I
don't know. Brendan Fraser. I remember his face now from. But
I think Cox's best friend is. I'm sure it is. Yeah, great episode. I think that's like one of my favorite episodes.
That's the one where like he passes away, and
but we don't know.
And then at the end, right? Yeah,
when we're at the funeral.
At the end, right? Yeah, JD's like, "Who you talking to?" That's an episode. TV.
Before we move on, kiss.
What?
See, that was supposed to be really, really cool. Kiss.
I'm not sure. No. We're introducing a new segment into the podcast. It is called.
Well, that's me. Was that as I thought it'd be?
That was not. That was very sorry. You caught. I was thinking about JD.
I thought you don't drink alcohol.
No, as in JD the character.
Yeah, cool.
He tried it. Three headlines in a film and TV. So, has everyone seen the Wonder Man trailer?
I was watching it on the way here, so I didn't finish it.
Okay, cool.
I don't really like watching trailers.
Probably then more. Probably everyone's seen this one. Wait, hold on.
So the point of this segment, guys. Okay, this guy's a fucking idiot. Okay.
He didn't explain to you either. Right. He just texted me like
basically
yo,
three headlines that we just have to react to. You know what I'm saying? Talk about for like a minute or two, and then that's it.
Well,
okay, within the film and TV space.
No words beforehand. So
yeah, low key, very much so. Huh? We should know beforehand.
I was because some of us might not have seen it. Some of us might have, and then we can obviously, you know, if we talk about it.
We haven't finished with his point. He was going to talk about House of Guinness.
Actually, do
which you should
first.
Talk about because
yeah,
it's a couple of weeks though, but I can still do it.
The promo's still going though for it.
How many weeks has it been now?
Two, but you know, Netflix shows the time span of those is like
The time span of Netflix shows is kind of mad.
Yeah, it's so random. I'm curious to know how...
They just have a new show coming out every week, so... Yeah,
but even some shows, like, the way the Pixar's life, like, 2 years later...
It does. Randomly. It does. Yeah.
House of Guinness is a historical drama brought to life by Stephen Knight, the creator of Peaky Blinders.
Sick.
He worked on it with a descendant of the Guinness family, but there was also a lot of controversy around the show because Molly Guinness, who is another sort of descendant of the family, feels as though the series doesn't truly replicate or reflect their family in a true light. Now, who's telling the truth?
Yeah.
I don't know. I can only take the series for what it was. And it follows the passing of Sir Benjamin Guinness, who was the sort of the guy that made Guinness a big brand before it really went sort of global, at least anyway. It was a big brand in America. At the time, Ireland had a lot of conflict internally. Obviously, as we know, unionists and nationalists and the conflict between Ireland wanting to have its own sort of... what's the word I'm looking for? To have... to be its own country, essentially.
I was going to say sovereignty, but that might be wrong.
Away from the control in the hands of Britain, and a lot of that politics is in the show, which is really cool. It follows the four children of Sir Benjamin Guinness in Benjamin, Arthur, Edward, and Anne.
Yep.
And it's like that's why people are saying like Succession / Peaky Blinders, because it's like who's going to take the reins of the family company going forward. The first episode was quite slow for me,
mm-hmm.
and then the second episode kind of really kicks into gear in terms of first episode sets up a lot of the political tensions and the family dealing with the aftermath of the passing, and episode 2 is like bang, here's the Succession kind of element of it, and it's really interesting. It really dives. I love the ties of the politics which intertwine with Guinness as a brand. I actually found the politics more interesting. I found the politics a lot more interesting because it dives into how you can be from different parts of the world or different parts of, they have different beliefs and different ideologies, but still have relationships and feelings towards people from polar opposite of the spectrum, if you like. The acting cast are really good. James Norton is one of the stars of the series. He's a really good actor. There's been some debates with Irish people saying they don't really like his Irish accent.
Yeah, I mean, the cast are saying that he's doing a good job, though.
And I just think...
I mean, what else they're
going to say? I just think, for me, as good... He's really good.
Mm.
Like, so talented. Just cast someone Irish, in my opinion. It evades any sort of, like, issue because it just comes down to acting rather than authenticity.
But then do you have that feeling about everything then? Because you know how there was this whole...
No, because if you can pull it off, you can pull it off. But if people are going to say you didn't pull it off, and that's, like, a strong feeling.
I think what we're saying is that even if it's, like, a percentage of, like, he might not get this, just...
But then, hey, string a bell.
That's what I'm trying to say.
String a bell, I nailed it. But authenticity matters because it's, like... Irish are so patriotic as well.
Yeah.
And it matters so much to them. And they're patriotic for a reason, like... And when it comes to fighting for their country, they go ham.
Yeah.
So I think that's why it matters a lot more than maybe String a Bell playing someone from Baltimore.
Or Damson Idris and whatnot. Yeah.
But we smoked the accents anyways.
Yeah, because obviously they had a whole thing about the English actors taking a lot of their roles.
Yeah, fuck them.
Work better.
One thing Stephen Knight does really well,
you know what I'm saying?
In terms of who he picks at least to work on production and set design and costumes... immaculate in the series. It really like makes you feel you're in the late 80s, 60s, 70s.
The 20th century.
It's 1800s.
1800s.
Oh,
yeah, it's 1800s.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, makes sense. Wait. I thought you meant like 1980s when you were saying this. Like,
no,
what?
No, no, no,
1860s.
Yeah. It's set in 1868.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Wait, makes sense.
Guinness started in 1860, bruv.
No, might have been before that, actually, to be fair, because he's quite old. Yeah.
Fucking hell. Bitter, and like
the series shows you how it globally expands.
Yeah.
But then like the amount of duty and effort and time that goes into representing your family. It's a really good series. It's really well made. The acting cast are great. It's 8 episodes. Season 2 has been commissioned already, so it's going ahead. Yeah, season 2, they confirmed it like a couple of days after.
I always find it really weird when like series that are based around like a specific brand or a specific gets like more than one series. Sorry, one season, because I'm like, how long can this story be? Because surely it's
without spoiling it, it can go on.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, I mean, where it's ended at season 1, yeah, we need more.
Like for example, if they do, have you guys seen The Founder?
Yeah.
Is that him? Michael Keaton?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I watched it last year. Good film.
Good film, right? So, like, imagine if they done, like, a series on that, right? How many seasons could you actually get of, like, a McDonald's-themed...
You could stretch that out. So, you could stretch that out for so long because you could
stretch it out. Okay, yeah. but
depending how
audiences care,
if their story to tell,
depending on the pacing, you could have broken that film down so easily. You could have done him looking for McDonald's, him finding McDonald's, and then him taking McDonald's. You do it over 3 seasons.
And also, it's dramatized, so you can make stuff up.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I also was going to say,
what House of Guinness does at times.
For House of Guinness, shout out Jack Gleeson.
Yeah,
the return to silver screen.
He didn't really, because people thought he took a break because of Game of Thrones, but he said it's not true.
Yeah,
he said he was just working on theater.
I saw an interview.
Literally, yeah.
And he was. And whether he's telling the truth or not, I'm going to take him for his word. Innit?
Yeah, same.
He's on another Netflix show as well.
Sandman.
Yeah, Sandman.
Sandman. He was top drawing this.
Yeah, Sandman's cheeks though, man.
Well, his cheeks are so funny, bro.
Yeah, you know, it's too much disgust.
Actually, it's not even cheeks, it's just like disappointing. You know when you have a great premise and the concept is so wavy, but everything else is just ass.
He does well in this.
I'm not surprised. He wasn't cheeks in Sandman, just the show was.
That was set up to be like the next Game of Thrones.
I just want to shout out Neve McCormack, who plays Ellen Cochrane. She's like 24, young actor.
Oh, yeah.
So sick. The relationship with...
She carries that entire, like... that whole
Fenian conflict, sort
literally,
of thing.
Yeah. Because the brother side of it, I wasn't, but her, yeah.
Yeah, fair. She was really, and the relationship with Edward,
yeah,
I wanted that to work. That
so did I, man. Yeah,
it upset me. Okay. Oh, okay. See, I haven't got a dark heart. I've got a bit of love in there.
There is something.
Do you
in
know
there.
What I'm saying, love Brooklyn yesterday. Come on, man.
You're changed, man.
Nah.
Go on, slightly defrosting.
Slightly. let's do the headlines. Go on, show us. Give us what you got.
So, pause. Kids, yeah, okay. Save a headline and then read out some facts about the headline. Okay, that's all.
All right, 1 second. And it's silent.
Wait for you, my boy.
By the way, Love Brooklyn's a good film. Yeah. After the Hunt,
when's it out,
I need
by
to
way?
Sit with. It hasn't got a distribution.
Do you know that Ayame messaged me yesterday after she watched After the Hunt?
No, it doesn't have any. So it released in the US.
You know, I've never. When I see people doing.
What's that? What's that about?
After the Hunt.
Yeah, it's not great.
It's a shit film.
Yeah, I heard it's not good.
Honestly, it was the longest 2 hours.
it says a lot of nothing at the same time. That's what I'd say.
When I see other people do interviews, like I've never like been jealous or it's like, oh, I wish I was there. Not really. I saw Nina talk to you.
Nina?
What's her name? Not Nina.
Young Asian girl?
Yeah.
You saw her yesterday.
Nina's her name, right?
Nila.
Huh?
Nila,
sorry.
Saw her yesterday. Lovely.
And she was, I think she interviewed Ayo and Andrew Garfield. Like,
she didn't get to speak to them.
Oh,
but I think they just kind of.
She went down, it's like, oh, I wish I was there.
They saw her, because she had a shirt. You remember that?
Yeah,
she had the Ayo Debris shirt. She was with Claire, as always.
Oh, yeah.
This guy fucking interviewed Paul Mescal, fam.
Sick.
Jeez. Yeah.
Cool.
I was going to say, has everyone seen the trailer for Wonder Man?
No.
I have, yes.
Yeah.
Cool. So Wonder Man is an upcoming Marvel Studios miniseries. It is a meta comedy satire about Hollywood that will premiere on Disney Plus. This January.
Yeah, January 20th.
They pushed it back.
Yeah. Cast includes Ben Kingsley.
Wait. Can we start with the lead?
Oh, I mean, it's just the name, isn't it? But yeah, the lead is called. It's Yahya Abdul-Mateen.
You got there. Yeah.
Who's seen? Have we all seen Watchmen?
Yeah.
Yes.
Because he was cold.
He was cold.
Good, Watchmen. Watchmen's good. I haven't finished it, but I like the show.
Ben Kingsley and I did not see this person in the trailer, but Ed Harris.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm seated. I am now ready.
You do the headline first.
So what were you all saying about that then? So we all looking forward to this?
I am. I'm intrigued.
I think you're gonna love it.
I said, I watched the first 30 seconds of the trailer.
That's what really got me. Is that the trailer? It's completely like different to anything Marvel has.
But obviously,
I didn't know it was Marvel. Yeah. You just said it now. I didn't know it was Marvel. You just said it now.
But like, as in, not only is it like fucking, it's like MCU. Like,
I feel like it's the back end.
Yeah.
My mind tells me it's towards the period where they were starting to. Try to make changes to how they were making shows.
Yeah,
I can't differentiate and say for sure if it had a showrunner, but I'm almost certain it's one of the shows that's like going to be like the new set of shows going forward from like X-Men 97, Daredevil Season 2, Vision Quest. Yeah, Vision Quest. It's going to be a lot of those.
Correct.
So whether they're good still or not is another question, but at least there's a bit of direction and someone steering the ship, if you like.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't actually know much about Wonder Man comic books. Like, oh. I actually avoided them growing up just because I didn't like the name. I'll be real. I just thought it was a bit cheesy. You know what I'm saying? Okay, but like seeing that big trailer, just the direction of what how they're doing it got me gassed. You know, and so like, you know, and I like that in the trailer they didn't lean into any of the superhero stuff.
Yeah, it doesn't look like it's a superhero film. Well, it's a superhero series. It literally seems it's on face value. It seems like, you know, like a show about someone trying to like get a role, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So yeah, super excited, man. Super right. excited.
Next headline: Knight of the Seven Kingdoms.
Yes, sir.
Oh yeah.
So obviously a prequel book by George R. Martin follows
the greatest slowest writer.
Yep,
ever existed.
Follows the tales of
just the slowest
Duncan the Tall.
So Duncan the Tall and Tolkien. Egg.
Yeah, and Egg, yeah.
We all know who Egg is.
Yeah. Tolkien slow. I don't know if he's. Mm? You said, is he slow?
Sorry, what was your statement?
The greatest slowest.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure his last book's still not finished. Yeah.
No.
His wife called him a fat lazy bastard.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's because of how he writes. Like he's meant to. You know, it was meant to be a trilogy originally.
Yeah.
But just because he keeps writing and creating characters,
which is actually good. I was also going to say about. This A Knight of Seven Kingdoms. Are we all excited for it? Number one,
yeah. It's Westeros. Yeah.
We've all seen the trailer.
I'm not watching it.
Yes.
All right. Fair enough. I remember I saw some George R. Martin talk about how he's actually very pleased with how it's come out.
For now.
For now. Bear in mind though, like, because he's someone that's like, whoa, he'll tell us if we don't like it. Yeah, like, so with Game of Thrones,
he'll write a memoir. So like or a web page.
So I saw a few things saying that it's not going to be told in the Westerosi way that we've been seeing things recently. How like, do you know how like Game of Thrones and House of Dragons takes around what 5 to 10 stories and just like, you know, mash them together. This I was saying apparently, okay, this is going to be a parallel storyline where it's two stories going side by side. So it's not going to have the same technique of Game of Thrones and the House of the Dragons. So I'm interested in that and seeing if they can pull it off. And then I also read that the source material is a lot shorter.
A novella.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that they're only doing 6 episodes, yeah, and they're 30 minutes long.
Oh, makes sense.
That's crazy.
I'm locked in, man.
That's crazy. Yeah. So I'm
locked in.
Same. All right. So the last bit of news is there has been circulating over the past week is that a certain someone is coming back to the MCU probably.
Ooh.
Kang.
What? Oh yeah.
I don't believe that.
I do, bro. Apparently he was spotted in Disney Studios in London.
I don't believe it, man. Kang was a good character. Yeah, Kang was good, but yeah, if he comes back, I don't know. I'm not like mad excited, but he was good for sure.
I think he'll come back to die.
I just don't see the. I don't see the point now. We've already.
I got the Ant-Man film completely ruined the Kang character for me.
Yeah,
the sense of gravitas to you,
I absolutely hear you. Okay, but like, you know how important Kang is to kind of like Doom's storyline, especially in like Secret Wars and Battleworld. Like they're literally like side by side for a lot of it. You know, so I do see it, okay, but like when you say bring back the Kang character, do you mean Jonathan Majors?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Because that's what the whole thing is. I don't think you can bring it back without it being him.
Yeah.
I mean, you can. You definitely can.
I mean, you definitely can, but like, I think...
It's comic book world.
Yeah, but...
We've seen that done loads of times in movies and TV shows. It's just... whether people will be receptive to a different version. But I think they will.
I want to finish off by just quickly saying rest in peace to Diane Keaton. She passed away yesterday.
Did she?
Yeah, at the age of 79.
Oh, wow. Rest in peace, man. That's crazy.
Obviously part of the Godfather trilogy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My son. Well, that is a wrap up for today. We are the Post Credit Scene Podcast, 14HQ Original, lovers of film, TV and theatre. Shout out to Manny, shout out to Huss. Kids producer. That's us. I've run out.
Boop, boop, boop.
Hi, I'm Lashana Lynch, and you are listening to the Post Credit Scene podcast.